best entrepreneurs in the world get told no over and over and over again.
I didn't know how I was going to make it work, but I was damn determined I was going to make it work.
Not realizing how much better television was going to make me at my job.
I thought all you needed was the idea, and then you were rich.
Welcome back to the Blue Collar Business School podcast. My name is Julian Clayton, of course, and this week I have to start by saying thank you. Thank you so much for all the support you've given this podcast, our website at bluecollar.business, the weekly newsletter we send out for free every Friday with interesting tips for your business. I just didn't expect to hear from so many of you so early in this process, and I am so grateful that you decided to reach out. And please keep it up. Keep sending those interesting business stories for the podcast. We're building up quite a backlog. I can't wait to get to each and every one of those interviews. Please keep telling us how we can improve the website and the content on it and that weekly newsletter each week. And please keep sending me those interesting problems that you need help talking through to solve. I love getting in the weeds on those things with you guys. It's so fascinating to me. And if you want to support this podcast, obviously you can rate and review on your favorite podcast service. Hell, you can rate and review on a podcast service you think sucks. Just don't take it out on us. This week's guest is a special one. Anthony Carino has been a friend of mine for the better part of a decade. I first met him when I was an executive at a construction technology startup called FieldLens. Anthony walked in our office one day because at his design build firm, they were looking for some software to solve some problems. But you probably know him best from his television career. Anthony has had multiple shows with his cousin John on HGTV, with Ellen, and now he's got a new project called TheBuild.TV. You can, of course, find that at www.TheBuild.TV. If you need specific links to any of this, you can always find it in the podcast transcripts on the website at bluecollar.business. But today, Anthony's going to tell us a story about how all that got started. And for the most part, I'm just going to sit back and listen.
You know, business is it takes you on an interesting journey. And if you have balls enough to go into it on your own and start your own venture, it takes you on that much wilder of a ride. So in 2002, I started a boutique general contracting and interior design and development firm with my father. If you really want to amp up the insanity, go into family business. That would be my first comment. I love my dad very much, have a great personal relationship with him. We don't really work well together. We have very similar style. We were both Uber type A's, and it made for some very, very anxiety-ridden years and a lot of turmoil back and forth. That said, we're no longer working together, and things are very much back to normal. We have beers on the weekends, go motorcycle riding, and all that good stuff. I know that's not the story for everybody, but you know, there's a lot of benefits to family business, and there's a lot of there has the potential to be a lot of catastrophe with family business, and I do like to point that out when I tell stories, because I very much had the latter of that, and it was definitely difficult. But fortunately, you know, relationships all intact and good. So we started that general contracting development and interior design firm together in 2002. You know, knocked a couple of projects right out of the park from the get-go. And it was really because we were focused on not making cookie cutter buildings. We were not trying to stamp out units. We took our time. We custom designed each and every unit. So if there were four units in a brownstone, we wouldn't just make every single bathroom the same. We wouldn't just make every kitchen the same. We took a much more custom approach to it. And you know, it was really interesting. I learned over time that people always had a reaction. Some were good, some were bad, but there was a reaction. And that reaction led to a much more visceral need and a much more emotional need to have the product that we put out when it was a positive response. And I found that rather than being in a sea of white with everybody else, white paint, white kitchens, gray countertops, blah, 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 really, you know, making these spaces unique spoke to enough buyers that we were able to command a premium for those units, and actually wound up generating a waiting list year over year because we weren't able to put the units out fast enough. But by the time we started the next project, we had people waiting and willing to sign up with a deposit prior to us even starting demolition. So it was a pretty cool experience from that regard. Where things went super sideways for me was 2008. You know, I remember 2008 probably in a much worse way than anyone who was not in the real estate market, in the development game. It was a shitty time for everybody, but man, I had a $7 million loan out, and I finished my building the day that Lehman Brothers went out of business. I literally cut the ribbon and then saw the news. I mean, the mayor was at the project. It was brutal, dude. It was absolutely brutal. And, you know, it was one of those things that in 2008, I mean, at least the way I remember it, I sure as shit didn't see it coming. I don't know if you saw writing on the wall, but
no, we saw nothing. I got one phone or one day I got three phone calls from mm-hmm. my three biggest clients and lost half my business.
There you go.
Didn't I mean, see it coming.
It's easy to look back in hindsight with 2020 vision and say, oh yeah, subprime. Oh, derivatives. Oh, nobody knew what the F that was in 2008 until it all got sorted and we figured it out. And no one went to jail. So we had to sell 20 because, so let me back up a second so I don't get too tangential, which I have a habit of doing. So, you know, the first couple projects my dad and I did, we did 4-unit brownstones. We got a 5-unit brownstone. And then we found this awesome warehouse built in the early 1900s. We added 2 stories to the top of it. So it wound up being a total of 40,000 square feet, 22 condo units, 14 parking spaces, and a commercial space. Again, very custom design. We did heated towel racks, heated bathroom, master bathroom floors, you know, nice upgraded appliance package as compared to what was typical at the time. And this whole market falls off the cliff. So we're selling 22 units through the next year. I mean, when you talk about having to get creative, it was insane. You know, dropping your pants on a pricing perspective was a no-brainer. That's the first thing you did. But you couldn't even get people through the door to look at these buildings. I remember vividly throwing. We were friends with this artist who lived next door. Pretty prominent guy, and we did a bunch of paintings and we did a fundraiser. It was right around the same time that the city of Abruzzo in Italy had a massive earthquake. So we did like a fundraiser / art show. We brought on some alcohol sponsors. We hung this guy's art in all the different units within our building, and basically as an open house through a fundraiser / art party to get people interested in these units, at least to get eyes on these units. We did wind up selling a unit because of that, and it more than covered the cost of the project. But holy cow, like, you know, we shifted from a strictly, you know, buy the building, do the development yourself, design it yourself, and sell it to an end user and customer homeowner, to a general contracting firm that was doing like kitchen and bath renovations. We started doing like condo association snow clearing for driveways and walkways in the wintertime. I mean, anything to make the money flow again was pretty much the motto. It was an absolutely brutal time. I will say we did get everybody paid back, the bank. We were one of only 3 developers that were able to perform on our note, and it was no small feat in getting that done, but it sure taught us a lot. And there were a ton of trials and tribulations along the way. So, you know, I look at like the real estate market today, and we're going strong for, what are we on, 13 years now. And I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, because, you know, the real estate cycles are about 10 years in length, and they're as consistent as anything has been in this country over the last 50, 60 years. So It's very difficult for me to invest right now because I see the tail end of what should be the tail end of an upswing, and yet prices keep climbing and opportunity is still there. So it's really interesting even today to see the impacts of 2008 on me and on my psyche and the way I evaluate things, because it's like, it's almost a little bit of like deer in headlights syndrome. Like, I want to do certain things, but I'm keeping it more to like private clients, design projects, construction management, as opposed to like, here's my money, put it in real estate right now. It's really incredible how much 2008 affected like the way I go about thinking and executing in the real estate business.
Pretty just crazy. The way you manage your money from a business side is like
100%. I mean, you know, I remember hearing old stories. My great grandmother used to keep money in the mattress, or, you know, whatever, like the people who went through the Great Depression. And I can understand more of that now. Like, I can understand wanting to keep that, like, you know, that war chest wholly available, because the flip side of what I'm saying and my experience was I saw a lot of people make an absolute shit ton of money in 2008, 2009, because if you were liquid and you had the ability to buy, holy cow, was there opportunity that abounded. I mean, people were getting out of second homes, first homes, I mean, dumping real estate. So it was really, really interesting. But right about that same time, 2009, end of 2009, we kind of tripped into HGTV. A friend of ours shot some video with us. She was actually, so this friend of ours was the girl who helped us throw the party in the building we were trying to sell, the art/fundraiser party to get people through the building. So what happened was at the end of that party, she said, you know, you guys are so passionate about what you do. It just comes across in the way you talk to prospective buyers and anybody. Like, you have such pride in this building. You should really have a TV show. And I was like, okay, sure. You know, it never really dawned on me, never crossed my mind. She's like, let me come and shoot a little video with you one day. We'll do some interviews, some fake interviews, and some, you know, we'll go to one of your projects or something. I said, okay, sure, no problem. Sure enough, she sends this footage to, I mean, she basically cold called a production company. They liked us. They sent a little test camera crew, shot a little more video. And then we didn't hear anything for 9 months. And we're sitting in our office one night. It was like 8, 9 o'clock. My cousin answered the phone. And, you know, the guy was like, hey, so-and-so from this production company, you remember us? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So HGTV is interested in shooting a pilot with you guys. And so, you know, John's kind of like hushing the phone and asking me my thoughts. And I said, look, man, I don't care what he asks you, just say we can do it. Like, just if he says, can you build a kitchen in 2 days? Like, we can do a kitchen in 2 days now. We didn't know it at the time. But I think he asked, can you build a kitchen in 3 weeks? And we were like, yeah, no problem. Nope. Yep. I just said, just say yes to whatever he says to you. And yeah, a short 2 weeks later, we were in front of cameras. Nobody, I mean, when I tell you nobody told us what was going on, I remember showing up to set the first day. And my buddy, now my dear friend, Nick, who made all our shows, we had met him once prior to that day. And we showed up like white as ghosts. He's like, what's wrong? I'm like, nobody told us what to do, man. Like, we don't know what the fuck to do here. And he's like, take a deep breath. Don't worry about it. He goes, just treat these people like you would treat any client. We'll deal with the cameras and we'll fix it as we go along. And I'll tell you, to this day, that is the best piece of advice I ever got from a television career perspective, because it just put me at ease. I was just like, yeah, I know what I'm doing and I know what I'm talking about. And this is the job I do every day that I've been doing for the past 5 years, 6 years at that point. So we started putting things in motion and just kind of ignoring the cameras to whatever degree, you know, you could. And we found that we had a pretty natural knack for it. And HGTV wound up doing, 8 seasons, 90 some odd episodes with HGTV. We did 15 or 20 episodes with the Ellen DeGeneres Show. And I mean, designed and built kitchens in just about every state in the country.
I was going to say, you guys were all over the place.
All over the place. Well, I mean, Pacific Northwest. We moved to LA for 3 months We did Vanessa Williams' kitchen, or Chris Williams' kitchen, Vanessa's brother. She surprised him with it. We did Alfonso Ribeiro's kitchen from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Jeannie Mai from the Style Network. Well, now she's on The Real. I mean, it's just a ton of cool. Like, we did Khloe Kardashian's movie theater room in Calabasas. Not one of my favorite, builds. I have no hesitation saying that whatsoever. But yeah, just interesting stuff that you never would have done. I remember the first time Ellen called. We designed an entire home in 48 hours, never being on the premises. Drove down to Pittsburgh 2 days later and renovated the entire house in 5 days. I mean, this is shit you would never do if not for television and production budgets. And it's really interesting because, you know, I just thought, oh, TV, this is like a free 30-minute commercial every week for my business. This is amazing. Like, not realizing how much better television was going to make me at my job, how much more organized, how much more attention to detail, because the schedules were insane. And you just had to dial in what you thought you were good at to a degree that you didn't even know you were capable of. So now there's really no project that makes me nervous at all. I'm just like, yeah, just let me know what it is, where it is, and when it has to be done by, and we just make it happen.
You see some of those horror stories with some of those shows where, like, after the cameras are off, these people are super pissed off about, you know, this or that or whatever. Did you ever get put in any of those situations where you had to make some tough calls around what you were going to do versus what they were asking for?
Yes. So that's a very real thing. And very early on in the process, you know, no one ever says outright, they're very crafty over there, but no one ever says outright, do this without a permit. But they're definitely leaning on you to do it without a permit. And I made it very clear from the get-go. I said, look, I have a reputation I built over the last 6-7 years here. I said, I'm not losing my business. I'm not paying fines. I'm not, I'm not jeopardizing my insurance policy because you have a budget you need to stay on. If you want to hire an expediter and get the permits ahead of time, you go ahead and do that. I said, otherwise, these things are going to go as they go, because when we started TV, all the projects were in our backyard until they started traveling us. So Jersey City is not a place you mess around with permits. I mean, you know, I generally don't mess around, period, when it comes to that stuff. But in an urban environment, when you're in multifamily dwellings and you have, you know, serious fire life safety issues and fire code and life safety code, like, I just wouldn't compromise on it. And when they realized that I wasn't going to bend, they just kind of backed off that line of pushing. But they without a doubt, they definitely pushed for that, without a doubt. But all in all, it was an extremely positive experience and a really fun experience to have, which ultimately made me better at managing clients, managing expectations, and like I said, paying attention to detail and laying out job schedules and understanding what was and was not realistic. So, you know, there were definitely very special circumstances for us to be able to get our episode, like in the later seasons, we got our episodes down to 2 days, but we figured out a very specific formula to make that happen. You found an easy airport to get to. You drew a radius that was an hour around that airport, and you went to smaller towns and our production assistants would meet with, or producers, associate producers would meet with building departments. And those people are generally more excited to have a television show in town as opposed to cities who just tell you to go F off. So those towns, we would then meet with the head building inspector and say, look, in order for us to do this in a timely manner and make it efficient for the production budgets, this is what we need. And we would basically have an on-call schedule for the inspectors, which we would pay for. But some municipalities just aren't willing to do that. So the ones that were had us come to town. We would then figure out casting in that town. And we would be able to get that done because we could call for a plumbing inspection at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night, and the guy would show up. And not that he was ever happy, but it only happened a few times where we had to do it that way. Usually, we were pretty on schedule and pretty respectful of everybody's time, and it was easy to get that done. And you know, so from TV, now we kind of transition into my latest project, which is The Build TV. That is the website, www.thebuild.tv. And The Build TV was born out of me being able to put less and less process and education on the screen on HGTV. You know, I love the shows we did. I'm proud of the shows we did for them, but they're not much more than a moving magazine, if you will, a pretty picture that gives you good design ideas, but it doesn't teach you about process. It doesn't teach you about planning. It doesn't teach you about, as a homeowner, what your responsibilities are as opposed to the responsibilities of your contractor. It doesn't teach you anything about the process of construction or project management, if that's something that you wanted to take on or at least have a basic understanding of. So as that frustration kind of crept higher and higher, I decided to start The Build TV, which the first season is live and documented me renovating, as you well know, Julian, renovating my firehouse from 1896. And through that process, I kept my camera rolling damn near the whole time. It covers a lot of ground, everything from me drawing my initial design plans, meeting with my architects, bid meetings with the contractors, reviewing bids, plan markups, you know, all the real information that homeowners need in order to see what it really takes to execute a home renovation and to do so successfully.
But also, and your personal relationships around those decisions are in that as well. Like,
yeah,
you're correct. Having those conversations, and that's part of it, right? You got to look at the people you're living with.
That's
right. You were doing that on camera.
Yeah. I mean, I set the tripod up in front of me and my fiance and just said, Jace, we're going to have a conversation on camera and just pretend that it's not. I gave her the same advice Nick gave me. Don't look at the camera. And yeah, conversations with your spouse, your significant other about tile selection, countertop finishes, cabinet finishes, you know, all those things are real problems. And I wanted people to get a real sense of what it took to get from the start line to the finish line. And, you know, kind of to put that in a little bit of context so people understand that I really do know what I'm talking about here, because these are just a lot of stories right now. We basically took a firehouse that had offices inside it, that's 3,600 square feet in total, gutted it and put it back together with all our inspections and a certificate of occupancy in 5.5 months in Jersey City. And anybody who knows Jersey City knows that is lightning speed. So it was really fun and super gratifying to be able to do it my way, not have to watch what I'm saying, not have to compromise process, not have to get all these little sound bites down to 30 seconds or 60 seconds. I mean, I droned on about certain things that I thought were really, really important because I wanted to drill it into people's heads. And I'm really pleased with the response to it. I've got a lot of great comments online on socials. You know, I released it on Facebook Watch, on Instagram TV, on YouTube, all natively. And then I took all of that and packaged it up at The Build TV on the website so that it's a resource. It's a living resource for people to continue to go back to, because as we all know, that social media rabbit hole, you know, that the algorithm just keeps churning and you wind up, you know, further and further down the list over time.
But that's an interesting point, though, because I do, like, I watched your shows. I doubt I watched everything you put out HGTV, but I watched it, right?
Yeah.
You know, we knew each other back then
absolutely.
For some of that. But I never went back and watched it.
Right.
If I saw it on and I was like, oh, I've already seen this one. And then I'm going through it. But, you know, I've been in the construction industry since I was 12 years old. I still find myself, what I'm not is a designer, and I've, you know, haven't done a lot of the kind of more modern techniques, especially some of the things that you did in your place. I still find myself going back and rewatching things from that because, you know, to say it frankly, there's no bullshit in it. I'm not watching something that's produced for the masses to be more entertaining than informative. I'm watching something that is a truly real experience. And that, because it's real, it is entertaining and it is also informative.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I appreciate you saying so. Yeah, I mean, you know, what do they always say? reality is always stranger than fiction, right? Like the realness of it is way more entertaining than, you know, creating a fake scenario. I remember vividly back in the HGTV days, standing in a yard in Maryland, having these two producers from the network — Nick would never do this to us — from the network directly saying, "Now, John wants to paint the house black, and Anthony, you don't." And I said, "No, but I like this house is going to look sick black." Like, no, you don't want the house to be black. And I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is where I'm at now. Like, I'm going to have a fake argument with my cousin because we need a little drunk." Like, no, yeah. No.
Yeah.
But when my fire pole almost didn't fit in my office, it is because I didn't realize that the garage door was on an angle and it really cut down where the fire enclosure for that fire pole that lived on the underside in the garage. I mean, that fit by 3 inches, man. Like, I was having a heart attack, and I actually shortened my garage up by 1 inch on both sides because I hadn't signed the manufacturing certificate with Clopay at the time. The woman from the garage door installation company came down. We went over everything again. She goes, "Yeah, your garage door is completely custom. So if you want to take an inch off of either side, we can get those rails in." And I was like, "Holy shit!" Like, that is super, you know, super fortunate. But it was a real thing that really happened. And yeah, it was important to me that it was entertaining, because nobody wants to learn in an extremely boring environment either. So I think my natural passion for what I do allows it to be more engaging and more fun. And the other thing I did to try and trick people into the education of renovations is that I created my video content in three very specific buckets. The first is the series, and the series is 12 episodes. It's the most HGTV like, if you will. It is super, it's story driven, it's chronological, there's an arc to it, it's engaging, yet I sneak in some education. Then you have the process vlogs, and the vlogs are like self-shot, self-edited by me, and it's that peek behind the curtain, you know, you're coming along with me on the job site, so whatever's happening that day. So it's quite sporadic and jumping around, and I explain that you get a million questions from a million directions all the time. And this may, if it's not making sense to you, believe me, it's not making sense to me either. Sometimes, like, you got to sit, you got to take a step back, take a breath, you know, process, reset, and then move from electrical to plumbing, move from plumbing to tile, and continue to answer these questions. And then for the super nerds who really wanted some like additional product knowledge or understanding how to ask questions in specific meetings, I created deep dive videos. And the deep dive videos is the third bucket. And those were literally like, set the camera on a tripod and leave it running for an hour and a half while I was in a kitchen design meeting in Italy. And you can see all the questions I ask. You can see all the iterations. You can see the questions my kitchen manufacturers ask me. How many times we go back and forth? How many times does the tape measures come out? You know, if nothing specific, just to not be afraid to ask questions and to push. And not every suggestion someone makes is a good one, including my own. So sometimes the guys would say, "Well, let's do this in the kitchen." "No, I don't want to do that. That's not the way I envision us using the kitchen." Or they'd say, "You know, this really isn't going to work." And I'd agree with them. So like just that raw video that allows you to get a perspective of someone other than your own, which you generally wouldn't get unless you were sitting in on someone's meeting or you hired a professional designer to be as part of your team. I just thought it was super valuable for people to be able to learn that way as well.
I got to ask a process question. What are you doing with the guys that are, you know, doing the real work, and how the hell do you get the right footage and audio and stay out of their way?
Yeah, it's a dance. It's a dance and a half. It's a great question. So first, I will say I could not have gotten luckier with Nick and his team. His production company is Simple Alien. Those guys are awesome. So when we were making the HGTV shows, I would have a lav mic on the inside of my shirt. My cousin would have a lav mic on the inside of his shirt. And then there would be a sound guy who everything comes through his board. And he would also have a boom mic, which is a microphone on a long pole for those that don't know. Right. So most of the dialogue would happen between my cousin and myself, or my cousin, myself, and the homeowner. So whenever the homeowner was present, they would have a lav mic on as well. But then when we're on the job site, the only way to do it efficiently was to keep John and I mic'd all the time. And then the sound guy would drop a boom mic over the top of whoever we might be talking to. And to answer your question about, like, do these guys get pissed off or whatever, all of these contractors are vetted prior to them getting the job, so to speak. They have to be willing to be on camera. And quite honestly, I was in a lot of those meetings, especially in the early days, because I understand the business of construction and I understand what it means to lose a day, to lose an hour, to lose 3 hours to cameras, or, you know, you can't knock that wall down until the cameras are there because we can't put it back up again. And we need that for the storyline and all that shit, which is very real. We were making a TV show, but they're also trying to make a home and get paid and get out with some semblance of profit. So basically, I would have a conversation with them, with a producer in the room, and just say, guys, this is the way it kind of goes. Like, it's going to be frustrating. I know, you know, we dealt with it with our construction company when we were doing the shows in Jersey City, but I promise you, we're going to get it done. We're going to get it done on time. We always get it done. We will stay shoulder to shoulder with you to get it done and just have a little faith in the process. And honestly speaking, I only had one episode ever. Two episodes. One episode that I made a contractor sit in the corner and just said, I'm going to run your guys because you had no business getting this job. You're going to get paid. Do yourself a favor. Just let's not get in an argument. Sit on the side, have a soda, and I'm going to run this job and get it done because you're not going to get it done. And there was one time that I took a contractor's head off. And then we were shook hands an hour later and we're buddies again and kept going. That was just more the height of stress and you know, job and TV and all the rest of it going on. But in 90 some odd episodes, two episodes to have, you know, arguments on. So we really treated everybody with respect. We it's no different than a client, really. I manage expectations up top. If you manage expectations up top and you tell people what to expect and then they see you as part of the team instead of just somebody sitting in a chair barking orders, you know, it really, you really had this, like, we're pulling together to get it done for these homeowners mentality. And it almost just became an internal challenge to us to see if we could get it all done in this crazy amount of time and get past all our inspections and turn it over. And, you know, I mean, I remember all the contractors used to stay for the reveal because we had this little video village that was set up on outside the home, and they would all be peering in and watching these homeowners react to their home in real time. I mean, these guys were blown away by what they were able to accomplish alongside us and what we were able to do to give back. Cause a lot of our shows were, you know, giving back to deserving people. So when you have that kind of environment, I also think, like, you know, people have more threshold and tolerance to fight through a lot of adversity to do something good for somebody else who deserves it.
They also get a different sense of accomplishment too, right? In a normal environment, that plumber would not be there when it came time for the homeowners to see it in the front.
He
did their job and then they were out and then the cabinet guy came in, you know, maybe he comes in and throws some faucets on after whatever, but you don't have everybody there.
Yep.
on that day. So, you know, being able to see the homeowner's reaction had to give them a better sense of accomplishment as well, which is also a gift.
100%. So the differences with the Build TV versus what we did at HGTV is I am basically a one-man show. So Nick and Simple Alien, in order to keep my production costs low, we have a set number of days that I shoot with him. So we have our ugly shoot, which is the befores, and my walk and talk about what we're going to do, what we're going to create, what's going to be in this space that isn't here now. Then we have like a middle of the project walkthrough prior to sheetrock going on the walls. And then we have like an end of the project wrap up. And then we had two full days of interviews after everything was done that I could kind of weave a common thread or a uniform conversation over all of the episodes throughout all of the rooms in order to have a good through line through the entire story. And then the other days were reserved for, hey, Nick, I've got a super busy day. I stacked the countertop guys, the cabinet install, the bar, the roof deck is going in, and like we had a lot of process driven stuff going on, we would have a sound guy, a cameraman come out. All the other days, I was on site as a project manager and the homeowner and the cameraman slash talent slash sound guy. So right. I wore about 7 hats a day in order to make it happen. But I basically had a handheld camera with a shotgun mic on top of it. And when whoever it was pointed at picked up the audio pretty well. So I did a lot of narration, but also it was really just important to capture the what was going on, because I can always add the audio later. We could always have my interview. We could always watch the footage back. But the one thing you can't get is you can't get the footage back again, right? Because construction is, once the backsplash is up, I'm not telling them to take it down and put it up again. It's, that's it. It's done. So we got to, you know, capture it as it's happening.
How much of that do you think is that the opportunity for you to do that yourself, those pieces, the days you're running on your own?
Yep.
How do you think the technology was even possible to do that back when you first started?
No, half the stuff didn't exist. I mean, drones were just becoming a thing as we were in the third or fourth season of our show. And just becoming a thing was not TV quality. The fact that I can shoot 4K on my DJI Mavic 2 now not need to hire a drone pilot is insane. You know, being able to shoot 4K on GoPros didn't exist then. So that technology is a big deal. And I would also say that regardless of technology, had I not been in the, I've always been a photographer and into cameras, but it was always very much still photography. I really learned a ton about, not only about video and settings and the technological aspect of filmmaking or TV making, but like how to tell a story. And that, you know, that's probably, if anything, still my weakest point. And that's where Nick really comes in and helps me weave that thread through all the different episodes. But I learned an absolute ton about that, and being able to tell that story and capture a beginning, a middle, and end, and then have the B-roll interspersed and make it interesting. You know, it's attributed to Nick, his team, and the Simple Alien guys. Like, it was just an awesome experience doing that.
Well, you've told a hell of a story today, man. I think you're doing all right with it.
Well, you know, I'm just having to remember my life here, you know, so it's a little bit easier. But when you are trying to educate somebody, I think it's, you know, because I have times where I'm super effing frustrated. And the last thing I want to do is pick up a camera. I just need to get these things answered, because every day that the build continues, that the firehouse isn't done, is money out of my pocket, is money I can't rent the apartment I'm living in. So it was a real challenge. It was a real challenge. I learned a ton, and I'm super excited to begin putting that into practice for season 2, which I know you know, but I'm doing up in the Catskill Mountains here. So just actually
super
met with
excited to see that.
Oh, I just met with the structural engineer and the excavator on Monday. I am this close to speccing a shipping container swimming pool in the yard, and it's going to be amazing. So very, very excited for that. All those episodes will probably start coming out in, probably in the springtime. So check out the Build TV. You can catch up on season 1 and start prepping for season 2.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me today, man. It's a really cool story.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, man. It was fun to reminisce and tell that. I haven't told that in a while. So it's, you know, it's always fun to look back and you know, see how much you actually went through and how you learned what you learned and how you're putting it into practice every day. It's pretty cool.
If you want to learn more about Anthony's latest project, TheBuild.tv, you can, of course, go to www.TheBuildTV. If you want to find Anthony on the internet, you can find him everywhere, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. He is always Carino Anthony. That's his handle. And thanks so much for listening. We'll see you again next week.